Hey there, party people, holiday party people. Are you enjoying your holiday spirit? Are you drinking holiday spirits?
Woo!
Did you go to your company party? Are you barfing and shitting all over the floor?
Every day.
Well, regardless, if you haven't done your holiday gift shopping yet, here's what I have on my list in case you want to pick something out. A bigger chainsaw than the one I have. A baseball bat with nails sticking out of it.
Oh, no.
A machete. An evil black goat. And socks.
For the goat?
Yeah, and if you didn't know, this is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we select a movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch it, talk about it, and vote on whether that dickhole is a whore gem or a stankin'-ass turd. My name is Cody, and I am a muck addict.
Shit! My name is Beth, and I am a muck addict.
Fuck!
Shit!
Fuck!
My name's Buggy, and I'm an evil lesbian bull cut.
That's just it. You are the bowl cut.
Mm-hmm. I'm the bowl cut you get when you're an evil lesbian.
Hell yes.
That makes sense. Okay, great. What do y'all have on your wish lists for Satan's birthday?
Socks sound pretty good.
Yeah.
With aloe vera.
In the socks?
You haven't ever had the aloe vera infused socks? I feel like every time I bring this up, everyone acts like I'm crazy. Look it up.
Is this a granny thing?
Yeah.
You might be crazy.
I'm not crazy. Look it up.
I mean, it sounds... I feel like...
They're infused, so they're like cooling.
And you can never wash them.
They don't have aloe vera in them. It's like that. It's, okay, I don't like want to talk about it anymore. Yeah, they're interwoven.
All I want for the holiday is just to like spend a few days in a cabin in the woods with no internets and books and my wonderful dog who's totally well behaved and silent.
Oof. I like the idea of socks. I want mine to be filled with pennies.
Oh, no.
He's on a weapons quest this year. How about you? What weapon do you choose?
I mean, I'm the one who started the whole sock debacle, but I guess for weapons?
Sockle.
My sockle.
Sadockle?
Sock.
Sodockle.
Yeah.
My favorite game.
Your weapons is a sock?
No, because that's already Cody's. So that'd be derivative.
Yeah.
Mine would be like a cane sword.
Oh, nice.
Cane sword.
Cane sword's cool.
I've always wanted one. I don't know like where you'd use one really practically, but I've always thought that would be awesome.
On the streets.
Did you know that I have rectal cane sword?
Oh my god. Good. That's what's actually in there.
The cane sword.
Okay, enough of that bullshit. What's going on around here? We did go to see Blood Rage the day after Thanksgiving, as advertised on the last episode, and it was awesome.
It was fucking awesome. You need to watch it. Yeah. This time I was right. She was not with us and I did not forget.
Yeah, it's true. I wasn't there this time.
It's so much fun. I mean, it is right up your alley too.
I've seen it before. I did not log it as something that I was particularly interested in the first time I saw it. Seeing it in a packed theater the day after Thanksgiving, kind of like being in the mood to see a movie like that. Man, it was so goddamn fun.
So good. And yeah, just like the, you know, they show it on Black Friday. And I feel like the like anti-capitalist rage is at like, you know, a high. I mean, it's always pretty high this time of year, but it's like.
I just don't do Black Fridays the same anymore either. I don't feel
like. Oh, because Black Friday, you get, yeah, it started in October or something. Yeah. And I fucking hated it. I'm not like, oh, I miss Black Friday.
No.
I hate it all.
Well, now there's not even deals. That's the other thing is it's like, hey, do you want to pay for three things in bulk that are the same price as three things separately? Here you go.
Yeah, I just. Yeah, I hate it. But that movie was great. And I think I thought I had seen it, but I hadn't. I was wrong.
I watched that movie Thanksgiving. Did you guys see that movie?
Is that the Eli Roth one?
Yeah, I think so. That was fun, too.
It actually was kind of fun.
That's the one. It starts kind of the same way. It's like, not the same way as that movie, but it starts, it's like Black Friday.
It's Black Friday, and it's like a terrible, crazy.
Somebody has to work, and everyone gets trampled.
Like, massacre of a bloody
I like that.
Black Friday massacre.
Yeah, I set my bar really low on that one and I ended up having kind of fun.
It's solid. It's not like bad or good. It's just, it's right in the middle.
We saw that in the theater, I think.
I think we watched it here on the couch, but I don't know.
Why would you guys go to the theater to watch Thanksgiving?
I don't know.
I don't know, because I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Speaking of wrong, we also got the date for Big Trouble in Little China wrong, and it's this Monday, and that'll be fun.
Mm.
Not that we didn't get it
wrong. People were analyzing that? Yeah,
I remember that we were like, oh yeah, it's like in a week, but it is Monday.
Yeah.
It's too late. You've already been painted as a liar.
And my other mistake is I feel like I didn't talk about The Shining when we talked about winter horror movies. And Cody said he mentioned it, but I'm like, that is maybe the ultimate one.
That is, there is snow.
We were glossing over them. It doesn't matter. It wasn't like we were going in full
detail. Yeah, I just feel like that, you know, is in the like top three for me.
Oh, yeah.
Anything else going on?
No, I don't think so. That was the only like holiday related movie I feel like I've watched recently.
Oh, movie related. I was going to say, I just got an email from the Portland Art Museum and they're bringing, I mean, they've have this new theater and it's rad and we go there often, but they're bringing movies back to the museum as well. So they'll have two venues starting in January and that's kind of fun.
Nice. Another, you know what else they're bringing back?
Huh.
Sexy.
Oh, are they?
Mm-hmm.
Heck, did it go somewhere?
It's been gone.
Yeah. It was canceled by the liberals. It's a DEI initiative. And
we can't have anything fun.
So now broads like have to walk around with their tits out again or something?
Yes.
Cool.
It's Mando. It's recession time. No more clothes materials.
Manda? Is that what you said?
Mando.
Mando. Okay, got it.
Okay, well, if you are listening upon the day that this episode becomes released,
what?
I will have a camera inside of my asshole.
Oh, that's right. Friday that this comes out is when they're going to get that cane out of there.
So if you're listening and it's around 2:30 to 3 p.m. Pacific time on December 19th, just imagine what the inside of my asshole looks like and these cane sword that is in there.
Yeah, pray, not pray, whatever you do, thoughts and feelings about it just being a cane sword,
or pray
if you want to. Yeah, we could do some good news. We could do with a little bit of good medical news in this house.
Speaking of pray, we got a movie to talk about tonight.
Oh,
it's Beth's movie.
God.
It's my movie.
What are we watching or listening to or looking at or listening to and looking at and then talking about?
We are talking about the movie Prey.
Prey!
From 1977.
1977. And this is important because do you know how many film/TV projects named Prey there are?
Two.
There are at least 15.
Oh, shit.
So, if you're seeking this out, if you listen to this episode and you say, hey, I would like to watch that movie, make sure it's the one from 1977 and read the description and make sure it aligns with what we say here on the podcast, because otherwise you're going to go in a lot of weird directions.
Yeah. And then Predator one is good.
Well, yes, the Predator one is good. And if you haven't seen that, watch that too. But if you're watching this one, make sure it's from 1977, which actually it could be the earliest movie named Prey out of the whole list.
I didn't know there were more than those two, but I didn't really look
too hard. So many things. Look on IMDb. It's just prey after prey after prey. This is also referred to as Alien Prey, which is the U.S. title. Okay, let's get into this thing. As we noted, released in 1977, this was directed by Norman J. Warren. Interesting note about Norman J. Warren. We reached
him via telephone and he's dead.
No. We reached out to him and he's
dead.
We gave him a reach around. We recently watched and reviewed the UK proto-slasher Schizo, a film by the infamous British sleaze director Pete Walker. And as we were doing our research on this film on multiple occasions, actually quite a few occasions, the critics were very quick to compare the filmography of Norman J. Warren to the work of Pete Walker, because I guess both of them came from a sexploitation background and moved into horror and kind of operated in a similar space. So I thought that was kind of interesting, considering that we just did Schizo and then we picked this, kind of had no idea about the connection there.
But there, I just shout out, in my general, like, choosing something recommended by somebody else, this came from Cody's October list, as did Schizo.
Oh, my list.
So you're the recommender this time.
I done did the recommending.
Good list then you got there.
What do you know? This was written by Max Cuff. Good
name.
Awesome name.
That dude did the screenplay. We'll talk about him a little bit later. The story by Quinn Donahue. We'll talk about the origins of the story in just a moment. This is starring very small cast, Barry Stokes as Anders. Barry Stokes is a good name.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Faulkner as Josephine, a.k.a. Jo, as they refer to her often in the movie. She had some horror credentials prior to this film. She was known for Vampires from 1974, a little kind of sexy British vampire movie. I have never seen it, but apparently people knew her from that. And then a newcomer, Glory Annan, as Jessica. From Canada. The music was done by Ivor Slaney, which is a good name.
Awesome.
We'll talk about we'll talk about him a little bit later. Art director Hayden Pierce. Where can you watch this movie? As far as I could tell, it's on Plex right now. And there might be an unofficial bootleg on YouTube. And if you have a movie store, there are DVDs and Blu-rays that you can get.
With special features. We got to watch some special features.
Blu-rays are great because you get to watch special features. So, what's this filthy nut tickler about?
Okay, I will definitely tickle your nuts. And bear with me because we kind of talked about this amongst ourselves a little, but it's kind of a vibe.
Yeah, definitely got a role
with it. It has a plot, but it's definitely like... Anyway, so... Movie starts, an alien arrives in the English countryside, and he comes across a couple making out in a car, and he murders them and assumes the identity of the male. Like, he shapeshifts into the male of the couple. And then he hides in, like, a cabin, an outbuilding on the property of two ladies, Jessica and Joe. The ladies are lesbians. The house is amazing. And there's some super weird power dynamics from the start. Jessica is the more femme of the pair, and the house and farm were inherited from her family. Joe is more butch, and she seems to be Jessica's caretaker. Am I not allowed to say butch?
No, you are. It's just there's something like this.
You don't own that word.
Uh-oh. Well, I'm just...
Joe
like,
is butch.
Joe, Jessica, she's actually quite... It's like one's a baby and one's the adult. And obviously, femme
Fems
can't be adult. I mean, have you met me? Anyway.
Femme's her baby.
Femme
is
equal
adult.
Baby. Man equal adult. There's some question as to whether Joe is keeping Jessica isolated against her will. Mm-hmm. And who she might have hurt trying to ensure this. The ladies semi-reluctantly invite the alien, who is now posing as a man named Anders Anderson.
Yeah, that name is so funny to me.
Yeah, to dinner. They're vegetarians, and he is unable to eat human food, so obviously some funny shit, including barfing, goes down.
Lots of barfing.
Yeah.
He barfs a lot.
And the dynamics get weirder and weirder. Anders also murders two cops, and we get a better look at his face. His real face, he goes into predator mode, and his face turns into like a dog man face.
Yeah, he's a dog.
Yeah. He's a dog.
He's a dog.
Because he's a man.
He's a dog for show.
Femme is weak. Butch is powerful. Man
butch
is power. Dog.
Man is dog. I like
that. I
mean,
this stuff really is like, there's some very like signal symbol stuff in this movie. He, Anders is not the only predator on the farm. There's a fox out murdering shit. And it kills the girls' chickens. And Joe flies into a rage. Actually kicks one of her dead chickens. She's got an anger problem.
Yeah, clearly.
And she vows to kill it. So the three of them go out hunting, and they fail. Later, Anders hunts and kills the fox, like in full predator mode. And he just kind of comes in and tosses it.
On the table.
On the table.
They're like eating
and
like drinking.
And they're
drinking
vegetarians,
tea.
But they're like, oh, cool. Which, you know, whatever.
Yeah, they're super hyped about it.
So that's a good reason to have a party. Everyone gets gussied up. Do you like that? Gussied?
I do.
And Joe dresses Anders in drag. Weirder and weirder power dynamics come to a head. There's a sort of battle for Jessica, who's like the prey caught between two alphas. There's also a great flopping around in a dirty-ass lake scene, and the film ends in some pretty serious gore. I We might spoil some stuff along the way, but I was just trying to leave the ending a little bit. Did I forget something?
I feel like Simon. Do you remember?
Yes, and that's one of the who she might have hurt. Which, yeah, we can talk about that. There's talk about a friend. So the women are isolated.
Mm-hmm. And they don't see many people, but they don't. Like,
and they had
mention.
A friend for a while, but he just disappeared. And it seems pretty evident pretty quickly that Joe did something to him.
And Jessica keeps mentioning, like, I wish Simon would come around.
And
like,
Jessica
that's
wants
something.
To go. Mm-hmm. And Joe says it's not. It's basically like she's telling Jessica it's not safe for her to go.
Yeah.
And you know, for a while, and maybe even we don't know like what the deal is. So maybe there is some. I mean, you know, it's the 70s. They're mm-hmm. gay. You know,
there is something.
Or are they? I mean, it's very.
And that's what Jessica says, too, because there's a moment where I think Anderson's like, you're trapped here. You know that. And she's like, oh, Joan, like Joe protects me. Like she protects me from what's trying to hurt me.
And I think that's pretty central to some of the stuff about the movie is that I mean, it's basically like Jessica is a baby and everyone's
because she's a femme. That's why.
That's right. Because you can't flounce around in skirts and also be strong.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope that you can hear the sarcasm in my voice.
Oh, no, it's pretty apparent, I think, where we stand.
Anyway.
Hell yeah, we're jumping right into this. I feel like we kind of like...
It's hard not to. What it is.
I feel like even when you're trying to explain the plot, it is like you kind of have to talk about...
The plot is like a power struggle.
Yeah,
and it's slow, but it's intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Okay, let's get into this analysis, which I feel like we set up quite nicely. Like a lot of the key topics are kind of like bubbling right to the surface here.
Hell yeah, bro. Come on.
Boom. We got high fivings. So Prey is essentially an adaptation of a 1923 novella called The Fox by D.H. Lawrence, which before Prey was released already had one adaptation in 1967. Called mm-hmm. The Fox, which was actually the inspiration for this film. As far as I read, it wasn't the novella itself. It was the film adaptation of the novella that was the inspiration for this outline or the storyline. Beth, you read the novella and you know a bit about D.H. Lawrence. I'm assuming D.H. stands for dickhead.
Definitely.
What can you tell us about this author and a little bit about the novella?
Well, have you heard of D.H. Lawrence? Had you not? I'm so surprised. I think it's one of those things where I'm like a book nerd, and so he comes up a lot. Like, I probably learned about him from Anaïs Nin, because he was like the original like literary smut author, basically.
Ooh, I support that.
Yeah, but and then when you read, it's not really, you know, it's just like everything was so repressed that any mention of like sexuality and this is all, I didn't really do much research. This is so I could fuck some stuff up, but basically he stood trial for obscenity charges for his book, Lady Chatterley's Lover, which was always associated. I've never read that actually.
Lady Chowderly?
Yes, Chowderly.
Clam Chowderly.
It is clam really. Chowder's so the lover? Barfing is based because. Give me some clam chowder.
I'm so stupid because I just realized why there's a fox in this movie, too. Like, now that makes way more sense.
Yeah, Chatterley. Lady Chatterley. But that's basically, he's somebody who died young. He was kind of, like, never recognized in his lifetime for being an actual good writer. It was more just, like, a shock. But I think he pushed literature forward. And, yeah. And about the novella, I read it. I was pretty into it, but then I did have to kind of like speed read the end of it today because, you know, I just decided to read it yesterday. It's not the same. You can see the inspiration, and maybe that like missing link between the first movie and this movie is more where it is, but it's definitely, it's focused on two women and a man who comes into their sphere.
He does.
He comes into their sphere. Which the sphere is probably a boob or something. I don't know. But he's not an alien. The roles of the two female characters are different, but it does have a similar like a lesbian relationship versus a like societally
acceptable
and like a woman's like what she wants versus what she needs to do for like her safety or financial security. And there's more than that too.
Are the like power dynamics from this movie kind of present in the book as well? Like, is there some sort of like,
yeah, but they're different.
They're just different. Yeah. Entirely.
There's a character who is torn between two people who are trying to like exert their will upon her.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you know, in this movie, the alien Anders, that's not, I mean, he's trying to do something that's for a bigger like alien plot.
Yeah.
He doesn't really give a fuck about
no
either of these women.
It's more for like observation purposes. Yeah,
he's
honestly
just like checking out Earth and seeing what humans are good for. He's and not.
What a backyard to fucking stumble into.
That house is so cool.
But that's also just such a funny, like, it almost reads like a comedy to me in some ways because it's just funny to like have your first perspective on Earth be like a tumultuous couple's relationship and like dealing with the stress of that and also not knowing what the fuck is going on and vomiting all of the time. It seems like a lot, honestly. It seems like a lot.
Well, that is, you know, one of my favorite things that happens in a horror movie is if there's at least one vomit or multiple vomits, I'm into it. But kind of coming back to this idea about the similarity between the novella and the film adaptation and then this film Prey. Some of the early research I did, which kind of keyed me into the existence of that novella in the first place, the thinking is that really the inclusion of a repressed lesbian relationship threatened by the arrival of a man kind of serves as the common thread. That's kind of like the key.
That is the same. Yes.
Yes. And, or I guess an alien dog man in this case. But those are really kind of like the key components, which brings up a lot of questions about what it means for this alien character to show up in a storyline based around this lesbian couple that is deteriorating. Mm-hmm. We can kind of see that early on that there's already some issues here with Joe's kind of controlling nature appearing early on in the film.
Really? No, thanks. You're more good than that chemical muck you drink.
I'm addicted. A muck addict.
You'll regret it when you're older. You know, it takes 5 years for caffeine to get out of your system, like tobacco.
I know. One day I'll stop drinking and smoking. Cross my heart.
And so I kind of wanted to dig into that a little bit because this is an early representation of a out lesbian couple where it's not just kind of their existence. It's not like a weird, like, we're going to shoehorn this relationship into the movie to steer the narrative.
Yeah.
It's just kind of them. So, like, thinking about that, is this portrayal of a lesbian relationship pro-LGBTQ? Is it homophobic? Is it somewhere in between? I found myself a little bit lost about what the potential message is here with this portrayal of the relationship.
I'm kind of two minds about that because I think, okay, so Joe is a misandrist, right? Like, she is anti-man. She's a man hater.
Yeah.
Have you got what you came for?
Yes.
What was it?
Nothing.
You've been quite stupid all day, Jessica. I think that man is contaminating this house.
Which that's like a dangerous label to put on lesbians, or that idea that like women become lesbians because they're so tired of men's shit, right? Like that's kind of an outdated idea. But that's not what the movie is saying, I don't think. And I think it's that thing where it's like, okay, this is one form of representation. And the problem is just, like, you can have fucking queer villains as long as queer people are not always. It's that. Like, right. When you get to a level of more characters. So I kind of think it's neutral.
Me too. Because I also don't feel like it's necessarily, like, overemphasizing, you know, like, the problematic nature of their relationship is, like, that they're both women or anything. Right. Like, it has nothing to do with the fact that they're lesbian and everything to do with the fact that Joe is just a controlling kind of bad mm-hmm. person. But I'm not exactly sure. Like, yeah, I would say, like, neutral. I don't know if we're going to get into this that much, but that, like, sex scene was
yeah.
pretty, like,
wild.
It was a lot. It wasn't really like wild. It was just like very long and like very, very like sensual. Like they were going for it.
It was intense and it was definitely like, yeah, I think Cody said it was rated X.
Yeah. You know, I have like a random handful of bullet points on this whole topic, but the sex scene discussion is definitely something I wanted to get into. And indeed, when this film came out, it did receive an X rating from the British Film Rating Board or whatever the fuck they're called. And it includes a really graphic sex scene. And the question I had is, was the sex scene just sexploitation, kind of knowing that the director came from that background into horror? Or was there more to it? Did it serve the storyline? And after a little bit of research, I did hear that the scene was included just to increase the film's overseas interest.
Interesting.
So it does seem like it was kind of just put in for titillation. But the other interesting thing about that scene is it was not written or like blocked out. It was improvised. So the actors
just kind of went for it.
Which, and I thought that was fascinating.
This is something we watched the special features on the Blu-ray, like I was saying, and one of the actresses, the one who played Jo, who's, you know, now like this kind of adore, I don't know how old the Blu-ray is, but she's in her 70s now, and maybe she was in her 60s. She was kind of painting the scene of it being, the set being almost like a hippie commune, because there were so few people working and they weren't, they like were sleeping overnight in the house. So I don't know. I have so many thoughts about it, how it would probably, it seemed like it felt very safe to the women. Like Buggy was saying, it seemed like Jo could have been of either gender and had the same effect as a character. So maybe the two women was like for shock value, even though, yeah, their relationship wasn't really shocking. And the sex scene felt like actual sex. Is that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to talk. But you know what? Because it wasn't like, hey, we're two girls with big tits and we're going to like smash them together.
No, it was
which
like,
that is also a real thing that happens. But like, it didn't seem like a lesbian sex scene filmed for the male gaze. It seemed like
two women
trying to get off. I don't know.
And there is some like aspects of it where I do think maybe, you know, the reason why Joan is so controlling and why I keep saying Joan, I don't know why.
Her name
is
Josephine.
There's like the bowl cut and Josephine. I keep thinking of Joan of Arc for some reason.
Your bowl cut. You are a bowl cut named
I'm a
Joan.
Bowl cut and I'm named Joan.
Yeah.
But that could have to do with the fact that they're, you know, lesbian and probably at the time, like that's, you know, not
fear.
Yeah, the fear of just like the lack of social acceptance. And I mean, they do kind of also talk about like, again, but mainly Jo just mentioning sort of ominous aspects. Like she talks about how, you know, when Simon left, I guess like at some point, Simon, this like mysterious character we barely hear about, like he had stayed the night one night and he left really early.
It's funny, Simon doesn't come and see us anymore.
Is it?
I wonder why.
Hopefully he's tired of hanging around.
He's very attractive. For a man, I mean.
Was he?
Maybe it was just his little cap. Do you remember the one he always wore? Funny, I've never seen him without it.
Why talk about him? So, he doesn't come around to see us anymore, so what?
And Jo was saying, like, they always leave, or, like, as soon as they figure out, like, you know, what kind of people we are, who we are. Like, there's something along the lines of, like, because we're lesbian, people
that's
don't accept
why
us.
Yeah, there is a hint of that. So, yeah, that...
Jo also says, like, the people down in the village, they're talking about us.
Right.
You know, she's, like, planting the seed that, like, anybody outside of this safe haven that we've created here on this isolated property... They're all, like, against us.
There's, like, more to it, too, though, because as we were like, joking about it, but Jessica seems very, very naive and unequipped for the world. So it even makes the obvious control dynamic. Like, for part of the movie, I was like, okay, because they talk about Jessica's parents. That's how they got the farm or the house, whatever. part of me was like, did Joe start off as like her caretaker or something? And then the parents died or went somewhere, because Jessica seems like someone who actually can't navigate the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. There's just a lot to it.
There is.
I think this is also, you know, we talked about the novella a little bit and how it's just a man in that. I might be getting off track, but I really want to know why you guys think they made him an alien.
Well, that is a very interesting point, which is kind of on it's kind of queued up on my next sub bullet point under this topic. That's a key element of this film, right? And I was reading, you know, multiple articles that talked about this, but the one that I kind of keyed on that brought this up that I thought was interesting, by Drew Burnett Gregory, writing for Autostraddle: the man who disrupts their lives is not a man at all. He's an alien who has taken the form of a man after eating him. This complicates the dynamic. The alien, too strange to be the seductive force often found in these kinds of films. Jessica's queerness is not invalidated. Her desire is to just get away from this one relationship.
Mm-hmm.
She's using the alien as a rebellion against Joe more than she's actually interested in leaving with this man.
Right.
Which makes it so interesting, and I've been wondering this myself, is there a deeper thinking behind making him an alien, or was it just like, what if he's an alien? And that brought up this really interesting conversation and dynamic about what that three-person dynamic becomes.
Because he's almost like neutral.
Yeah.
He's almost like he is in the shape of a man, and he is a predator, which, you know, we associate maybe with masculinity, but he could be, he's genderless. I mean, he's not a human.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think my guess, just like the putting in the sex scene for the overseas audience, is that aliens are really popular right now. I feel like that's
I feel like it's almost like, well, I guess earlier. Aliens have always been popular since the 60s. So, I'm going to take back what I was about to say, which is maybe this is before aliens became popular.
Like before all the like Area 51, like.
Yeah, maybe. But like, yeah, alien invasions have always been a thing since the 60s. So,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's one of those things like what we were talking about Sledgehammer last week. A perfect film.
I love it.
No, but the happy accidents, or the, like, you know, when the director in that, like, people ask him things, he's like, phew.
Dude, I don't understand why people like this movie, man.
And you know, like in your own life, when you're working on a project or something and something just gels, where you're just brainstorming like, with someone and you're like, suddenly we're going in this direction. So my guess is it's something like that. But you're right, the adding him, because the novella, it's a guy. It's also, the other thing I want to say about that is, in the novella, they're older women, and they're not old. They're like in their late 20s, maybe. I think it says pushing 30.
Mm.
And he's like younger than you.
Oh, he's younger than me?
Yeah. So he's about 11 or 12. No. So
he's 11 or 12? Oh my God.
No, but he's like a young.
Oh, so they were pederasts.
No. he's like 20. So that's another dynamic that's played with very differently here.
He's just like a young man.
This, there seems like age is like they're all about this. Well, who fucking knows? He's an alien. He could be 2 or he could be.
That's true. He could have been born.
He was just born. Or he's 400. I mean, so
he's been a dog since birth, though.
Age is not a factor. And in the story, it is. And the power. It's just interesting. It's just the same kind of deal with power dynamics, but they're different. Yeah, I don't know. The alien part is interesting, and the why.
I think so also. And so that's kind of a key part of the story. This idea that there's sort of 2 predators in the house.
Right.
And Jessica is
the prey,
potentially. One issue with thinking about Jessica as sort of the singular prey in this scenario is that the alien, Anders Anderson, has a much larger and broader motivation. And then Joe is kind of the real predator to some extent, right. Which kind of comes back to that depiction of like a butch lesbian as a controlling predator. Is that homophobic? But that's not my main point here. Basically, is this Alien versus Predator?
Oh my God, it is Alien versus Predator.
Yep. The literal totally version.
That's great. But wait, on the Predator thing, that is something really important. I'm going back to the boring gender dynamic stuff, but that is one thing, like Joe Butch wants to be a man, that stereotype
does
of a lesbian. I'm couching it in like the limited understanding of the time. Wants to kill the fox. Anders is a man. He kills the fox. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's like that to it where it's like, because she has a female body, she can't quite be the full predator. You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying at all? Like
I know I what do, you're saying.
Kind of, she's yeah. like, I am the boss of this house and I go out and I kill things, even though I'm a vegetarian, which all of it's pretty weird. But then he comes in. She, even though he's actually an alien, she thinks he's a man, but he can actually like deliver the goods. And that is the one thing that I think is like a little bit low key problematic about.
Yeah. It's like, this is what a man really looks like and can pull
off. Do you know
what
I'm saying? Like, you are rolling your eyes.
No, I'm not rolling my eyes.
You're yawning, rolling your eyes. No, but that's my last non-funny. I do think that is part of the dynamic. And that is the dynamic in the story that does carry through into this. It's like two women are living a life. There's some codependency, and then a man comes in and he's got the goods, you know?
Yeah.
That a woman actually needs to be safe and protected. And anyway, that's the thread that I think stays in both.
Yes. And it's a weird dynamic because the classic interpretation of this situation would just be a straight man coming in. So we have this alien that's genderless. And I mean, I think it's kind of evident, but one of the quotes that Sally Faulkner said in her interview on the Blu-ray was, Joe's intention was to humiliate Anderson in front of Jessica. And so they invite him to this party after they successfully kill the fox. And basically dress him up in drag because that's the only clothes they have because they don't allow man clothes in the house.
And the ones they have are bloody.
Yeah, they're covered in blood.
But because Anders Anderson is an alien, he doesn't care that he's dressed in drag. And
makeup and everything.
Yeah, he's just kind of going along with it, which aggravates Joe because this plan isn't working, which I thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It really took that quote from Sally Faulkner to put that in perspective, I thought.
Yeah, because he is just kind of like a blank. I mean, it's not even his fucking body.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to do with that thing between his legs. You know what I'm
he
saying?
He doesn't know what that is.
Exactly. And speaking of that, what's the deal with this alien?
Yeah, what is the deal with this fucking alien?
He is
Who
weird.
Has comments about the alien?
Yeah. So one of the first questions, and this is kind of this is going to be a shit-talking segment to some extent, but like, what does he understand and what doesn't he understand? Because that is kind of maybe the weak point in the writing here, right?
Yeah, and it makes it fun, though. It's one of the things that makes it fun, but it's like, okay, he doesn't know what water is. We should talk that. I'm going to do like a teeny. They have this like he's drowning scene because he's trying to murder a swan, but he doesn't realize he can't walk on water because he doesn't know what water is.
Yeah.
And he's like, swim? What is swim? But them trying to rescue him from the water goes on so long. It's slow motion. The water is fucking filthy. In the special features, both the director and the actress that plays Joe were talking about how the water was fucking like stank ass, like
stanky.
Black, dirty, smelly. Like you could smell it from where they were filming. And the actors were like getting it in their mouths.
Oh,
and the director
God.
Was just like, I was so impressed by them because he's a sweet man. But anyway, yeah, he doesn't know what water is. He doesn't know what swim means. Yet he can just like kind of pose as a human and like people ask him questions and he responds naturally.
And he asks weird questions too, where like at first I was like, oh, he must have adapted really quickly. Because the first thing he does, like off rip when he gets in that house, is like, anyone else coming to live here? Do you guys live alone?
Yeah.
What's the deal with like the dynamic here? Like he's on it immediately asking the most suspicious questions humanly possible. Except he's not a human.
Humanly possible.
But yeah, then like then he gets confused about other random things.
London?
But then like comes back to other things. Yeah, because there's this long extended hide and seek game.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, hide and seek. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the slowest scenes, even though it does serve a purpose. But, you know, they introduce this idea of a game. And he's like, what's a game?
Yeah, right.
But then, you know, earlier in the movie, Jessica asks him, like, have you ever been afraid? And he's like, you wouldn't understand. And it's like, how would an alien be able to respond to a question like that right. with a question with a response like you wouldn't understand? But then, like, come back and say, what's a game? I don't know.
You know? Yeah. Like the complexity of.
He also understands like the relationship dynamic of Joe and Jessica in a way that where it is so nuanced, and yet he is asking like, I don't know what London is. Yeah, sure. It's just it's not consistent. Like it's confusing because it's like I think sometimes they forget he's an alien when like that's how it feels like. They forget and they're like, oh, we should like add in a thing about how he doesn't understand something. Like, just to solidify, like, he is an alien.
That's a good idea. That's a good point. He does watch them fuck.
He does, but like only for a little bit and like not, like, it's not even like, doesn't seem like he's like, oh, okay.
But it makes him understand what their relationship is too, which again is like a tell that he knows too much about human, you know? Mm-hmm. Like
he's like, oh, so they're together.
The last point on this is he's got like a communication device hidden in the like cabin that he's staying. It's like, it's hard to explain because it's like maybe like the staff used to live there or something, the slaves.
I mean, it would probably make more sense if you read the novella because I think they get into what the different. They don't explain what that cabin is. Well, so
he lives in the house with them.
Oh, yeah. So there's that extra cabin where they find him. But
he has a communication device in there and he speaks to whatever his like alien supervisor is. And they fucking speak English.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Which is obviously, you know, we're watching a movie. They don't. Maybe it's the 70s. They're like, people aren't going to read. Like, we're not going to go like click, clack, clock.
Mm-hmm.
Clickety clack.
I would love that. Clickety clack, clack, clack. Clickety clack.
You know,
I would have bought into it more.
But it is funny that he doesn't, and his face, like when he goes to communicate, his face doesn't like go back to normal. When he's almost drowning, he doesn't go into his real face.
There's also some.
He has control over it.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
He has a lot of control over it.
That's one of the things I don't understand is like, how can he control his transition between a man and
his alien face,
which is like, that's the other thing. It's like, how does this body snatching situation work? Which we didn't really get into the fact that, you know, he steals this body from someone and then just kind of like waltzes into somebody's property.
And he limps for a little while.
Yeah, just kind of completely in control of this new body.
I want that.
Yeah.
It's also like a really weird fighting sequence too with like some policemen. Do you guys remember
that? That's great. I mean, that's just fun. That's straight fun.
Yeah, but it is weird how
it's filmed weird.
Because he like swoops Mike Slap. I can't even control my body and I've been in it for 46 years. No, but like he goes into predator mode and he totally changes, but it doesn't just, you know, a lot of times that's like, you know, the predator like smells something and then suddenly he's, you know, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
True.
Anyway.
Okay. So long story short.
Long.
The fact that this guy's an alien is a little bit of a, I guess, a dicey storyline element that takes a bit of, what do you call it?
Oh, suspension of disbelief.
Yes, suspension of disbelief.
I like it, though.
It has its moments, for sure.
Like, it wouldn't be a horror movie, maybe, with... Well, he could just be, like, a murdering-ass dude, I guess.
True.
But the way he murders and the ripping and stuff, it, like, adds to the gore.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, like, you know... So we're talking about the alien and some of his characteristics, and he stumbles upon couple ladies that are vegetarians.
Please, sit here, Mr. Anderson. We're vegetarians. We have to appreciate the real inner beauty of life. We cannot allow ourselves to behave like animals.
I'm sure Mr. Anderson understands that, Joe.
Do you think so?
And we learn pretty quickly that he cannot eat anything that isn't raw meat.
Right.
Which is obviously a deliberate tension point, but the role of vegetarianism in this film, I thought, was a little questionable just because it doesn't seem like these characters outside of the alien really care about vegetarianism. You know, that's what they claim to subscribe to, but, you know, Joe finds out that a fox has killed her chickens, and her immediate reaction is to kick the dead bodies of the chickens.
And she hates dogs.
She hates
animals.
Yeah.
They have a bird. We didn't talk about Wally. Wally's kind of a plot point, too.
Yeah.
Joe hates animals, but she's a vegetarian. Yes. Maybe that's why she's...
Well, I also feel like they do set up this, like, they're vegetarians kind of as the tension point because he can't eat meat. But then it's also like, he can control this body fully, but he can't eat things that this body could consume.
Right.
And also, like, they don't really, like, make it a point of contention other than he just throws up the food constantly. And they're like, well, I don't know. I guess Anderson doesn't like the food.
He can drink a shit ton of champagne.
Yeah. That was the other thing I wanted to talk about. It's like, okay, he's drinking. Like, he can't seem to consume any earthly food other than raw meat.
Right.
But then just, like, hits the champagne like he's never not had champagne.
It's because it's fermented. No, I'm kidding. He just smashes that shit. No, it's weird.
Well, it's alive, too. Maybe there's cultures. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's cultures in it.
It's because it's bubbly. It's alive. I don't know. It's definitely not, like, a genius level. Well, and we learned this from watching the thing is that there really wasn't much of a script.
Yeah.
The whole thing was definitely like a very like gonzo filmmaking. That's going a little too far, but you know what I mean.
I think that's a good pivot point to talk about a little bit of the behind the scenes here, some of the film components. So just a few notes about the making of that we've learned over the last couple of days. So this was a very low budget, fast shoot. It was shot in 10 days when they pitched it to the director. They said they had about 3 weeks before they started shooting, and they had no script. They just had an outline, which I thought was interesting. And they brought in this young writer who was a journalist before. I don't think he had ever written a script. And he was just kind of writing the film as they went. They just, you know, they had this outline. They just had him pull up new script pages every day, and then they'd shoot him the next day. So that's a hell of a fly by the seat of your pants type of deal.
Sounded pretty fun, actually.
Yeah.
It turned out way better than I had a right to. I mean, well, all the director was talking about how the actual crew, the DP,
double was his penetration.
What?
Double penetration.
The double penetration. It was his first time doing double penetration. No, he had been a cameraman and then he became the director of photography, which is the other DP. And how he was actually really talented and he just brought in all these people that were working on professional projects. So like the actors and the crew are good.
Yeah.
Location is gorgeous.
Indeed. So the makeup effects were interesting, and this is something we haven't really touched on. They didn't really have any art directors or makeup directors or anything until the last minute. Director Norman J. Warren kind of brought some people in at the last minute, one of which was an art director who essentially just raided the prop department of the studio that they were allowed to film at. And they just kind of took whatever they could find to furnish the house, which ended up being very random. And there was a lot of stuff. So there was, you know, a giant grand ballroom, but also this weird shabby kitchen that was just kind of like janky. But then also a giant great plant room. What do you call that?
conservatory.
A conservatory, yes.
That's the best part of the movie, is that fucking room.
Yeah, so they brought all this interesting stuff in, but the makeup effects were kind of done haphazardly. And this is kind of one of my issues, is that when Anders Anderson turns into his alien form, he looks like a dog man.
And they didn't talk about how that's just like, they were like, uh-oh, he kind of looks like a werewolf, and that's all, we don't have the ability. And apparently it was like really fucking shit to wear those. Oh, his eyes turn blood red,
yeah,
too.
Yes.
And contacts teeth. And fangs, yeah.
Which, that was kind of one of the things I was going to note, is that I felt like the, you know, the uncomfortable contacts were maybe the most effective piece of the makeup design. They could have just done that. But then they put the little dog nose on him and the like dog teeth.
Nose. He does have like a whole dog mug. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, there seems to be some disagreement about this. A lot of the critics that I read referred to him as a cat man.
What?
You think he was a cat man?
I was like, look like a cat.
Yeah,
that's
I was immediately like, oh, he's like a werewolf dog man kind of guy. But some people looked at that and was like, that's a cat man.
The director said he looked like a werewolf, and I'll go with him.
Yeah, no, it's not a cat.
Indeed. We had him we had him over for tea or whatever we said.
We did.
Yeah, that's funny.
They used real animal innards for some of the gore effects.
I know that, yes. Which is gross. And they were very cold.
Apparently they were very cold. The music, which I thought was a very key element of this film, it was done by a classically trained composer named Ivor Slaney, as we noted earlier, who has a great name. Just happened to work at Shepperton Studios. That's where they were filming all of this, on the back lot of Shepperton Studios. He was also a musician, so he quickly conjured up this thing and played several of the instruments on the score. Apparently the director also played some instruments.
He played the flute. I remember this from the thing. He was like, oh, and also, you know, I play the flute and the piano. So I was just like, all right, I'll just do flute. And it wasn't flute and piano. It was like flute and some harder than, not that piano is not hard, but something weirder.
Yeah.
The like credit, flute and tuba.
The credit theme is banging.
Cool.
Yeah, the music in the drowning scene is banging.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's an interesting kind of hodgepodge of things. The last thing I kind of wanted to bring up before we get into our business is something we learned while watching the special features was, you know, they had to work very fast. Everybody was kind of in it and dedicated. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the cast and the crew were living in the house on the studio set. And it reminded us a lot of the special features on the movie we reviewed a while back, The Attic Expedition.
Do you remember that? It was just like slept there and they did it out. It was like a labor of love because the director was lovable and everyone was like, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. We're not getting paid. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You could feel it.
There was a interesting commonality there where the way that the people involved in the film were talking about this, very similar to the way that everyone involved with the Attic Expeditions was talking about their experience working on that film, which was also low budget and shot sort of haphazardly, as far as I understand. Okay, so I think we've talked enough about this thing. I feel like there's so many dynamics on this motherfucker that we could talk about it forever.
It's a great work of art.
Indeed, indeed. You know, people have referred to it as a cult film. We don't have to, you know, we don't have to get into that per se at the moment, but let's just, you know, let's just do some business.
Business it.
So, the obscurity rating on this thing, IMDb votes 1,746, IMDb critics 41, Rotten Tomatoes reviews 1. There was one critic review on Rotten Tomatoes.
1.
You can find this online at 2 places at the moment. Unless you have a video store in town, you can go down there and rent it from them. All in all, on our metric, it's a 7.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, a little bit
That's
higher than
obscure.
I know. Yeah. I feel like I just ripped it.
I feel like I ripped it.
I feel like I just ripped it.
I ripped it from you. I ripped one on you because we're on the couch together. Oh, is this where it just becomes a fart podcast? Yeah, I did not rip podcast. It.
I feel like I just ripped it. That's the end of the podcast. Done.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Well, this is going to be interesting. Let's see. Speaking of shit, is this a gem or a shit turd? Let's find out. We're going to count to 3, and then we'll do the thing where we up or we down our thumbs, and we close our eyes, and somebody screams, and somebody shits their pants, somebody pisses their pants.
Somebody rips one.
Somebody vomits.
Someone already ripped
you
one.
You vomit.
Everyone dies. Someone comes back to life and tell us what's happening.
And then, I don't know. Ready.
I'm scared.
Here
we don't
go.
Be scared. Be cool, and motherfucker.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, good, because that's about right. It shouldn't.
Interesting.
Yeah, I do like it though. Oh, the block broke.
I know.
That's good though, because I think
block broke.
We haven't had a full like unadulterated gem
in a minute.
Because
that's got to be saved for the special ones.
Yeah, so I'm glad we don't talk about it ahead of time, just so everyone knows. It's just how it happens.
Let's talk about our thoughts and our feelings and how we voted here. Mm-hmm. The results were 2 thumbs up and 1 thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone want to justify their thumb?
Justify your thumb.
Well, I guess I'll say something first because I was the thumbs down. Now, I do like this movie. Like, I want to make that clear. Like, I'm not completely shitting on this movie literally or anything like that. There are aspects of it I enjoyed and really liked. But I feel like it kind of just fell flat in certain areas where I don't know if I'd like rewatch this movie again realistically. Like, it just didn't really like stand out to me, but I thought like everyone who acted in it was really good. I loved the set design. I thought like the alien aspect was funny and interesting. I like this connection to this short story. The power dynamics are intriguing. Like, I definitely don't think it's a full turd at all by any means.
It's like a turd that's stuck.
I just don't think it's like a stuck turd. And I just don't think it's a gem.
That's worse than an actual turd.
Actually, a stuck turd is worse than an actual turd. You're right. It's just not a gem. It's a diamond in the rough, if you will.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah, it's rough.
It's rough.
And I think even though I chose this, and I chose it after already watching it once because I wanted to see it again, it's got a lot of problems. And it's slow and it drags. I just think there's something in it that is like a kernel of something. A diamond.
Yeah, a diamond.
Stuck inside a piece of coal that needs to be rubbed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like putting a Hot Wheels in a condom and putting up your butthole.
Yeah, it's the exact equivalent of that, actually.
Is that someone who died?
I don't believe so.
I was like, was that Ryan Dunn?
That's
not the reason he died.
Well, I know, he ran into a tree, but like, whose butt was the hot... Anyway... Yeah, it wasn't his butt, I don't think. I really like this movie. I enjoy it, but I think it is kind of not a great movie. But I have a special little feeling about it. It's a special little guy. Listening to the people who made it, like the Attic Expedition, same deal.
Exactly.
The people who made it were like, people like this? We really liked working on it. How cool that people like it.
Mm-hmm. That's always going to earn points. I feel like just you can tell when the cast and the crew are really like passionate about something. And I always like appreciate that.
And they felt like supported and they got to just kind of I'll just bring it back to they got to let it rip.
Yeah, good vibes on a set. You don't really hear about that as much.
Especially like in the 70s.
Yeah, like a good cast, a good crew. Everyone was having a good time. And that's what you prefer, honestly.
And there's some great scenes.
There's some cool shit in it, for sure.
Yeah, I had a hard time with it because on my first watch, if we would have watched this once and done this episode, I think I probably would have thumbsed it down. Because for some reason, I'm not sure why, I was really excited about this movie. And then watching it the first time, I was like, nothing's happening. This movie is terrible. I don't get it. And then watching it again, for some reason, the storyline dynamics started to pop out for me. And I started to think about the intention behind all the scenes and kind of knowing that they were just sort of writing it as they went along.
Mm-hmm.
I started to think, why is this working so well as creating this interesting tension and creating important plot points without having a fully fleshed out script? And I thought that was really cool. I liked how sort of beautiful it looked and sort of interesting and quirky. And then they leaned into the gore at the right places. Mm-hmm. The makeup effects was one of the things that almost took me out of it. But then at the same point, I'm almost like, oh, maybe it's like a so good it's bad thing.
The other way.
So bad it's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start saying so good it's
you
bad.
You already
so
have.
So good it's bad, man.
The one thing I will note that is very hard to overcome is the sound mixing sucks in this movie.
Oh, and see, even
on the
even
on the Blu-ray, they
oh,
didn't.
She watched it in
they
quality.
Could not. They cannot fix the audio. It is terrible.
Oh, definitely like the dialogue. I remember you saying like, oh, I remember this from the first time. Maybe we need to turn on the subtitles for the dialogue.
It's terrible. It's
a big ass house. It's actually a big house too.
The acoustics.
Yeah. The acoustics.
Yeah. It almost killed it for me. But it's so weird and so random and so randomly fun that I think people should watch it. I don't think this one should disappear into the
you get tits
the
and
ethers,
bush
you know?
Too by the way
not really any bush
yeah you do
no,
see
there's
her
no
bush,
bush.
You yeah do. You do
I don't see I did not
you,
I didn't
did you watch
see
an
no
edited
bush.
Version
you almost see a butthole
yeah
I didn't
yeah.
see a butthole either what
well,
the hell are
you
guys
don't,
talking about
I said almost not you
he's
do.
Just always looking for a butthole but
keyword almost
but no you see her bush you do
I don't
Jessica's
remember
Bush.
Seeing Joe Bush. So
no,
I don't know what you're
Jessica
about.
Bush.
I well, yeah. I'm just
saying. You don't see Joe's Bush. See your tits though. Anyway.
Okay. Well, we did our big one on that one. It's a semi hard gem, or a gem with a small amount of turds
still on it,
slapped onto it.
Yeah.
straight from the earth.
You know, a good dig up from our October list, which we're still going back to. And it wouldn't be an episode of Gem Hunt if we didn't do a little thing that we like to refer to as special time.
Special time.
You like a special time?
Do you like it?
I like it. I have a special time. It's me.
What
so
is
long
your special
it.
Time?
It's going to be the shortest one ever. I just want to say, Buggy has a party to go to.
No.
Crows. I love crows.
They're
like
awesome.
Crows?
Yeah, and I have this little gang of them.
She does.
And I used to have some that would come talk to me in the morning right outside my window, but the motherfucking city cut down the birch tree out front.
Fuckers.
And I still see them a couple times a week, but this is horror adjacent, I think. I'm talking about crows.
Crows are, you know, heavily involved in horror movies all the time.
And I'm trying to, like, just my special times are sort of about real world experiences. And I walk the dog in the morning and I have these crows that just hang out with me and they follow me. It's because I give them dog treats. I know it's not because they really love me, but
they trust you. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, they swoop down They walk right next to me. A month or so longer than that, my sister was here and we were coming back from walking the dog and they were with us. And she was like, can you make this stop? Because I hate it. And that was like the peak of Crow success to me, because I was like, I can't stop them.
No, they just,
because they're just with us and they walk with me. And I ran into a neighbor who was like, I see you with your crows.
You're the crow lady in the neighborhood. No, we have
there is a OG crow. Also, I'm not trying to take the crown. Last point on crows. We have an OG crow lady in the neighborhood. She has a bag with like an embroidered crow full of, I don't know what's in there. And she walks down the street
and just throws the crows.
And
stuff.
She's got like 20 of them.
Whoa.
And I have like,
you got to catch up, man.
I don't know if I want to, because I think it sounds expensive.
I feel like you could get your own army and have your army fight her army.
They're the same crows, I'm pretty sure. They're real spoiled in this neighborhood.
So they're like, I was going to say something so fucked up. Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, I was going to be like, they're ran through. Yeah. They're going to multiple people for food.
They do have a neighborhood full of people. Anyway, everyone, feed your neighborhood crows.
Feed them. And don't be mean to them, because they'll know who you are.
Say nice words to them. I speak to them and they tilt their little heads. And they look at me and they're like, all right. And they hang out by me and they're not afraid of me.
They're not. They're pretty chill.
They're a little afraid of my dog.
Albert looks like a crow.
I might have to sacrifice him. I'm not sure.
Yeah, just send him to the crows.
Crow dog cinema. All right, that's all I got.
Oh, shit. Special. Okay. So.
That's enough of that.
Here's a quick note. We're going to take like a, you know, an extra week between our next episode. So instead of 2 weeks, I think it'll be about 3 weeks.
I think this is the first Buggy's hearing of this. We're taking Christmas break.
Oh,
or we're taking solstice break or crow.
It's holiday break.
Holiday.
We're just not going to like, you know, we're going to give ourselves a little bit
vacation,
of time.
All I ever wanted.
But here's the thing. The next movie is my movie, I believe.
It is.
And I have a few options I've been considering. I have two front runners, and I don't know which one to pick. I've put one in each of my hands.
Oh!
Would you like to pick a left hand or a right hand for the next movie?
We're going to need a second to converse. Right.
We pick right.
Right.
The right hand. You picked wrong, my friends.
Uh-oh.
Because the right hand...
Is it the fucking AIDS jabber?
Is L.A. AIDS jabber!
Actually?
Yeah! More high fives on the couch, man.
So, here's the thing. I had a classy movie lined up in my left hand.
No, you didn't.
I did. I had...
You had a compressed turn.
It was just AIDS jabber in both of them.
Both hands.
I'm just kidding. We're not doing L.A. AIDS jabber.
Oh, man. Are you kidding?
No, we are. We are.
Yeah! He's actually mad though.
I'm just kidding, you know.
You gotta reap what you sow.
I feel like, you know,
that's right.
We've talked about LA AIDS jabber enough at this point. We have to watch it.
And I so, wanna watch it
too.
Our next movie will be LA AIDS jabber, I guess. And then we'll be canceled. And so that might be our last episode, because who knows what I'm gonna say.
That's true.
I mean, I can't okay. I mean, after some of the things about like protect your neck. I can't imagine it getting worse.
Yeah.
It can always get worse.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt. We'll be right back.